We have seen some challenges that we have faced when it comes to natural disasters. And so we've weathered those storms literally. And I think what it has proven to us is that we have to be diverse and we have to be ready for a shift in the economy and in our industry.
Today's episode is brought to you by Relic. As many of you know, I own an advertising agency called Relic, and we work specifically with tourism destinations. If there's any of you that are struggling with what to do next, or you've tried agencies that don't specialize in tourism, or if you've been using the local flavor for years and years and you're just looking for something new, I would say give us a call. Give us the opportunity to take a look at your plan, see what you're doing. Use our tourism knowledge and industry specialty to examine everything from your brand to your tactical execution and make recommendations of how to help. We'll do that assessment for free. We'll give you those recommendations for free. And if you like what we say, maybe you can hire us to execute on those plans. So kind of a risk-free opportunity to have us take a holistic look at everything you're doing, provide some recommendations, and you can kind of see us in action. If you're interested in having us do something like that, please send me an email directly at adam@relicagency.com. I would love to set that up with my team. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. I'm excited to be with you today. We've got a great guest for you, and as you may recall over the last few episodes, we are on the road, and we've made several stops in Tennessee, Alabama, and I just left Oxford, Mississippi, and I am now in Elvis Presley's birthplace, Tupelo, Mississippi. I'm with Neil McCoy, the executive director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau here in Tupelo. Neil, welcome to the show.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me. It's great to have you here in Tupelo.
Oh, man, it's exciting. And you know, I actually, before I came in to your office, I drove out to Elvis Presley's house and wanted to get a look around there. And cool little area, and I'm sure we'll get into it today, but what a great asset to have in your destination.
Right. You know, everybody always says you got to find something that separates you in the marketplace, and we are the one and only destination to say we birthed the king of rock and roll. And so, yeah, that's our claim to fame, and we will always be that. And hopefully for your listeners and many other people out there, we'll be so much more.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll dive into all that. But before we do, I've got a couple of icebreaker questions I want to ask you just to get the juices flowing a little bit. So the first question I have is, what is your dream destination? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Well, actually, Adam, I was working on that bucket list item and then Corona stopped me. I had the itinerary, I had the flights booked, and I was headed to the Grand Canyon and doing some national parks with my kids this summer. It was booked for the first week of June, and we were going to do Zion and some of the slot canyons and do the Grand Canyon, Horseshoe
Bend. You were headed to my neck of the woods.
Yeah, I was. But Corona hit, and those changes took place, and so we are scheduled to go back out maybe, hopefully, in May or June of 2021, but still going to go, but just got slowed down for a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, because that is an epic trip.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. My kids are of the perfect age. They're two teenage boys and a 10-year-old daughter, and you know, it would have been amazing to kind of unplug and just take in the beauty of the Western United States.
Well, and they're old enough, you can do the real hikes, right?
Yeah. So we had talked about that. We were going to do some of the more challenging things, and they were up for it. And so, you know, we've watched a documentary 2 weekends ago about a couple of guys that hiked through the Grand Canyon.
Oh, wow.
And it was on National Geographic, and it was pretty intense. And so we kind of saw some things like, that's pretty intense. I'd like to do that. I'm staying away from that. So,
yeah. Well, you know, the good thing about your trip getting canceled is now you've got somebody that can help you plan that trip and tell you what you need to see, what you need to do, because, man, that is my backyard.
Yeah. And, you know, we were looking forward to part of the drive, but mostly getting out and exploring, you know, outside the vehicle too. So, yeah.
Well, great. Well, so that's one question, and that's a good piece of your bucket list there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your favorite trip you've ever been on.
Okay. Again, I'm going back out west in Reno, Lake Tahoe, mostly Lake Tahoe, you know, that skiing at Heavenly is absolutely my most favorite thing to do.
Okay, so you went in the wintertime.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and skiing up there in Heavenly is Heavenly, huh?
It is. I mean, it's you know, I could do it as much as you would let me. It's absolutely. I think the lake with the mountains, and it's just picturesque, and the skiing is phenomenal for my level. You know, there's probably others that could probably ski. Probably
I'm sure there's some people in Utah that will take a little bit of offense to that, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You know, and before we turned the microphones on, I was talking about a great experience I had there in Utah and some of the driving up to Sundance, having a meal there. But as far as going and experiencing, it was absolutely my ski trips to Heavenly.
Great. Sounds like a great time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good stuff for us to kind of get to know about you. It sounds like the outdoors is really kind of what motivates you, and you sound like you're more of a rural than an urban traveler.
Yeah, I do love the city. I love big cities. I love to see them. But as far as going and doing, I want to go and explore and actively explore.
You don't want to sit in a bus and...
Nope. I do not. Okay. I do not want to be contained.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's learn a little bit about you,
okay.
Neil. Tell me about your background and how you got into tourism.
Yeah. I started off, I graduated from Ole Miss with a degree in recreation management, went to work for the Parks and Recreation Department, putting on sports tournaments, and I kind of cut my teeth doing that. I then moved to Jackson, Mississippi, and I was putting on special events, putting on triathlons, century bike rides, Christmas parades, Easter egg hunts, 4th of July events for the city of Ridgeland, and then had the opportunity to come back home, which Tupelo is home for me. It's where I grew up. Had an opportunity to come back here and do sports sales for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and did that in 2004. And then in 2010, I was fortunate enough to be offered the job as executive director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and you know, a decade later, here we are.
So I actually love talking to people that have been in the industry as long as you have. And the main reason for that is that this is not your first crisis. The coronavirus
right.
crisis is not your first crisis.
Right.
You've been through the economic downturn of 2008 and 2009. And so I've got to imagine that that has given you a unique perspective on how to approach the coronavirus crisis during this time. Can you tell me a little bit about maybe how that helped prepare you?
Well, oddly enough, Tupelo survived the 2008-2009 economic downturn probably better than most.
Great.
And especially from our tourism economy. We saw a lot of folks continue to take small road trips, which is what our destination is geared for. We're a drive market, and so we were able to shift and pivot, you know, which are kind of keyword buzzwords right now, shift and pivot.
Yeah.
But we were able to do that in 08 and 09. We didn't see a downturn. We, you know, our tourism tax collection continued to increase in those years.
Wow.
And so we were fortunate there. The other thing is that we were just very fortunate in that Toyota Mississippi was announced. So they manufacture the Corolla right here in North Mississippi. And so they were building that. And part of that upswing is when they were starting up the plant in 08, 09. And so we had
so
a lot of
really
the timing helped. That's right.
Yeah.
But you know, what we have seen is we have seen some challenges that we have faced, like when it comes to natural disasters. So we've had a tornado that affected our city that kind of had some shutdown. And so we've weathered those storms literally. And I think what it has proven to us is that we have to be diverse and we have to be ready for a shift in the economy and in our industry. And from a hotel perspective, we were okay. From the restaurant industry, that's been quite the challenge. And then, you know, when the pandemic hit, it's almost the hotels are still suffering because people still aren't traveling like they were. The restaurants, we've seen some of the best of what they're made of. The restaurant industry really did what they could do to stay alive and stay open. And we have tried to shift and be a resource for them more so than the hotels.
I think you've given me some interesting pieces of what Tupelo is as a destination. Now let's look at kind of the 10,000 foot view. Give us the overview of what is Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah. So a lot of folks that may or may not be familiar with us, as we mentioned earlier, we're kind of, our calling card is we're the birthplace of Elvis. We're located in the northeast corner of Mississippi, about halfway between Birmingham and Memphis along Interstate 22. We are about 3.5-4 hours from Nashville, Tennessee, and we have a direct connection with them because of the Natchez Trace Parkway, which is a 444-mile-long national scenic byway. Thank you. The headquarters are right here in Tupelo, so we have a visitor center. We have a national scenic trail that starts here in Tupelo and that moves south. So a lot of people hike that trail here. And from a destination standpoint, we are a heavy industry-driven visitor market. And so 40% of the rooms purchased in our market come from business travelers. And then the CVB steps in and tries to drive the convention market and the sports market. And we do that with about 30 to 35% of rooms sold in the market there. And then the other 20 to 25% comes from the leisure travel market. That's from people that are coming here for weekend getaways or for festivals, concerts, those kind of things. And then we have probably another 5 to 10% that are, you know, family reunions and those kind of things, or the medical community. We have a large hospital here in our community, so we have some rooms that are booked because of medical reasons.
Okay, so those percentages, I've got to imagine, have changed over the last several months. So obviously there's been more pressure on your leisure traveler to sustain your hotels and help them keep going. How did you pivot? And I'm using the buzzword, but I'm going to do it.
Well, we're still trying to figure that out. Certainly the sports market has helped us in the short term. In early June, we started having sporting events again, mostly the amateur sports, youth sports, and that has helped. That's been what has helped in our recovery, what's driven the market. Some leisure travel, the business traveler, the midweek visits are still down 35% or more. And so that's a struggle, and that's a place that the CVB can't move the needle. Like, we can't affect that. And so we don't even try. It's not a strategy of ours. So what we have done is we've seen the convention market is kind of just on halt. They're not having meetings. And so we've kind of determined that what we're going to do is we're going to lead with sports, and we're going to lead with ways that you can travel and visit Tupelo safely, and put out the ways you can visit here. You got to wear a mask when you go inside. Restaurants are now at 75% occupancy, that you can have drinks until 11 p.m. And so all those things we've promoted, and we've done that. The other thing that we did early on is that we hired an ad agency to come in and help us and determine travel sentiment. And so we're kind of keeping our pulse on what the travel market is saying they're willing to do. And that's kind of tricky, you know, and because it changes weekly based on COVID numbers, and it just changes based on, you know, the feeder markets that we're in that typically travel to Tupelo. So, you know, it's just trying to keep a finger on what's really the sentiment of the traveler out there.
Yeah, I know that because there's so much more pressure on your leisure market, it's been a challenge. But at the same time, I know that the state of Mississippi has taken some great steps to get some money appropriated from the CARES Act to be used for tourism promotion. And there's only a handful of states in the country where I've seen that happen. So how are you guys taking advantage of that program to help get leisure to supplement what the void that's been left from business and convention travel?
Yeah, if your listeners could be here with us, they would see our matrix board here.
I like the brainstorm board.
We have a brainstorm board where we've started going through taglines and things that we think would be inspirational for travel during these times. Again, you rely on the sentiment index to say whether or not we're ready for travel. And, you know, Adam, just being totally honest, our visitors just aren't ready to travel. Yeah. And so what we're doing is we're planning the spend of that money to know when they would be ready. And if they're not ready, what we're just doing is trying to build brand ambassadors for when it is time to travel. And what we're trying to do is put out inspirational messages about who we are in Tupelo.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what you're saying is you're taking that money because it has to be spent in 2020, which is really the complication. And I know that there's efforts being made to maybe extend that deadline. Mm-hmm. We'll see, right?
We'll see.
But because of that, there's pressure to spend that money now. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's a use it or lose it type scenario, you want to err on the side of using it as long as you can do it responsibly.
Right.
So your efforts right now are focused on inspiration for the future. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what that timeline is, but that's kind of where you're headed at this point.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So what we've done is we've sat down and put out kind of a timeline. So we have a short term, midterm, and then long term goals in this. And you really don't even know how to put a time on what is short term, what is midterm, what is long term.
Right.
You just don't know. So what we have done is we've identified that we want to create brand ambassadors in our short term. We want to create inspiration in the midterm, and then we want a call to action for long term.
So brand ambassadors, and I just want to make sure that our listeners are understanding this correctly. These are influencers.
That's right. These are influencers. These are people that we think will travel, and when they do travel, that they will have an effect on others. And that we want people to believe our message. And so we have to be truthful in our message. And that, you know, my biggest thing is always whatever we're selling, we have to deliver on that promise.
I love it.
And so that's a big thing is that, you know, and working with a new ad agency that, you know, is kind of learning about us is like we have to be truthful because at some point we're going to get called out on it if we're not being truthful in our marketing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. That is a huge portion of my book is authenticity. Mm-hmm. It is so critical that the message matches the experience, mm-hmm. and I'm glad you're putting so much work into that. I also like that you're taking a research focus to help understand what travelers' sentiment is. I'm wondering if in that research process that you've been in, have you seen your target customer or persona change during COVID?
Yes, it has changed.
How did you discover that?
Well, I mean, it's through the sentiment index. It's through who is willing to travel. And quite honestly, it comes down to demographics of one, who is capable of traveling in these uncertain economic times, and then who is willing to travel and who's willing to travel somewhere wisely, you know, to understand what's going to be there. I mean, this country and all the decisions that are made, every decision can be picked apart and be politically divisive. And all we're saying is when you travel, travel wisely, and here's how to travel to Tupelo. And, you know, so yes, our visitor profile has changed a little bit. We're still in the same feeder markets. And what we're saying is maybe you would be typically a traveler that would take a trip to Vegas or to Chicago. Well, then if put a pause on that because that's a little uncertain. Why don't you take a road trip and find out true Main Street Americana and see a small town southern city that had a great influence on the King of Rock and Roll?
Well, this is where I think we're going to see a real resurgence of the rural destination. And what I mean by that is you've got so many people that as they thought, I want to take a trip this year, right? Sometimes they were choosing, do I go to New York City or do I go to a rural destination? Well, in many cases, because of the amount of attractions and opportunities that New York, and I'm using New York as an example, but that it presented, they would choose New York. And all of a sudden, by the way, New York, millions and millions of travelers every year, right? Now, a large portion of those say, oh, New York doesn't look as attractive as it did last year, right? And suddenly the rural destination comes to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the proactivity that I've seen taking place with some rural destinations is great because there's so much, some people call it pent-up demand. I would even call some of it diverted demand.
That's exactly right.
And I think the rural destinations that are being proactive, like it sounds like you are going to be able to capitalize on that opportunity.
Yeah, and we've got to start now creating that inspiration or at least that intrigue of, hey, wait a minute, what is this city? Who is this? And, I mean, if you look deep enough in this board, you might find a moment where we talk about, you know, you look at us as trying to be a southern music destination. Well, we're 3.5 hours from Nashville. We're 1.5 hours from Memphis, which are great music destinations, right? And they're the big cities from our perspective, and they have the glitz and the glamour, and they have the great destinations. Well, we're not. And so we're small town, slow down, where you can walk by and hear an amateur on the microphone singing some great music, enjoying a you know, Main Street, and it's very safe, and you know, it just looks completely different than Nashville and Memphis. Those are great destinations, but we're just completely different. And it's going through our creative and finding a way to inspire that, and staying top of mind when they do get ready to travel again. And to do that, we have to be very smart and careful, because we like working with Nashville and Memphis. We're not saying don't go visit them, but we're saying we're an alternative, so that diverted demand.
Yep, absolutely. I want to talk about Tennessee. You touched on Memphis. You touched on, what was the other one that you said?
Nashville,
of course, Nashville. One of the things that I find interesting about Tennessee specifically, they were one of the first to open. And so what you had is markets that may not be ready to receive travelers, and a market that was ready to travel, right?
Yeah.
Because they opened up. And then you also had a market that was ready to receive travelers, marketing to travelers that weren't ready to travel. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a paradox there. But have you guys focused more on Tennessee because of their willingness to open up sooner than other states?
Probably not for those reasons. Tennessee is one of our bigger feeder markets. Tennessee and North Alabama,
there.
It's already there. That's right. And so we've stayed and remain consistent there because a lot of our marketing spend has already been in those markets, and we're just kind of continuing on and just maybe shifting the message that we're putting in those markets.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about your recovery campaign then, because okay. I love this brainstorm. I wish our audience could see it, and I'm not going to post it because I don't want to share your creative secrets with anyone.
It's certainly not ready yet, that's for sure.
But I love it because it's clear to see that you guys are really putting some thought into this messaging. How did you go about even knowing when to start this brainstorming session?
Well, we went through an RFQ process to find an agency to work with us. And then going through that RFQ, we just basically looked at what each agency's thought process. How are you arriving at that? And so we settled with an agency, and I'm not going to mention their names. I don't want to do that to you on your podcast, but we felt very comfortable with their thought process and how they go about it. And there's a lot of people that are already in the marketplace with ads and creative, and we're not. And we're okay with that because travel sentiment is still saying they're not coming just yet. They're not coming enough to make a difference to move the needle.
Right. Well, because you've got to get a return on investment.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And so what we have done is we've gone through, and here's the other challenge, is the agency could not travel here. They just couldn't travel to the destination yet safely. And so we understood that. And so what we had to do is to send them a lot of our assets that we have and just kind of help them understand who we are, a lot of our brand strategy, send them a lot of our research that we already had, put them in touch with our PR agency, which we've worked with for a number of years. And so they did a good job of figuring out who we were and what our message already was. And then how does that compel into the, or how does that land into this pandemic? And so we are just now at the end of our discovery phase. And what we're doing is we had our first look at creative. And so kind of to paint an illustration here, we have four quadrants of four different pitches, and we liked two of them really well, and then we just liked some small elements of three and four, and so we're kind of blending those and trying to come about a way to inspire travel when people aren't ready to travel in masses yet.
So one of the things that I like that you did is early on you said, "We need help," right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think some people would maybe perceive that as weakness or whatever, but I think to me it says you were taking action immediately, mm-hmm. right? And it was pretty early on in mm-hmm. the process of COVID hitting and everything that you guys realized you needed.
That's
help.
Right.
How did that come about?
Early on, I was asked to be a part of the COVID task force with our city administration, and so I had a peek behind the curtains, if you will, with Oz there. So I kind of see that we're in this for the long haul. So what we did is we rallied together as a team. We pulled everything off the marketplace. We all of our ads, we pulled back in, and we just went quiet. Social media shifted to being more of an information source than anything. We were fortunate that we have a staff member. Her title is the in-market strategist, and she's kind of the conduit between us and our partners and our partners and us.
Oh, I love that you have that role.
And so she stayed on the phone probably more than anyone else. And she, and as most everyone else, as executive orders change, both from a state level and a local level, she was pushing that information out and trying to be very clear and very concise. We would do Zoom calls with every restaurant owner that wanted to get on. And our mayor was getting on those Zoom calls and answering questions specifically. And we're saying, hey, we're trying to be as business friendly as we can. And so these are the things that we can do. These are the things that we can't do. So we were an information source more than anything else for about 6 to 8 weeks. And then after that, during that early part, so we kind of divided up the staff and say, okay, y'all are to assist Elizabeth in her in-market strategy, and you contact these people. The other half of the staff, okay, let's figure out where we're going to be on the backside of this. And that's how we started on the RFQ, and we started finding an agency. And so we started that process probably early April.
Wow. Yeah, that is early. That's mm-hmm. good. And I love that you took action. I mean, engaging your stakeholders and understanding that you needed to find a partner to help you and everything. I want to talk, you really kind of turned me onto this role that you guys have here. And what's her title again?
In-market strategist.
See, I feel like one of the things that coronavirus has done for destinations that is a real positive is it has forced us to engage our stakeholders at a much higher level than we ever had before, right? Because the restaurant that's doing really well, because we were at a 10-year high when everything kind of crashed, right? That restaurant doesn't really, it's not a priority for them to call you back and say, hey, we're up 14% or we're down 5%. They just didn't really have much incentive to communicate. But if you built that relationship during the time that things were good, all of a sudden when they need help, who's their first call?
Yeah.
Right? And so tell me a little bit about like how that position was created and how long it's been around and what you've seen from having someone in that role.
Yeah. That position was created. It came out of research. Young Strategies does our research work for us. And so we identified that there was a disconnect between us and the community, and especially our community partners like our arts groups and our hotel partners. So that position has been on staff for about 6 years, but the last 4 years has been managed by Elizabeth Russell in our office. And so she is less of tourism marketing and promotion. It's about when the visitor checks into the hotel room, the last thing we want them to do is to sit in the room and channel surf. Like when they arrive, here's all the things that are going on in Tupelo tonight. And so she goes and shuffles through the toy box and gets all the great toys and sets them on the counter and says, look at all the great things to do here. So don't just go channel surf. Get out and go to trivia night here. Here's live music here. Here's, you can go get Mississippi's only meadery is located right here, and they have game night and they do this. So it's her role to get out there and do that. So she attends all of our arts meetings. She attends all the downtown Main Street business promotion meetings. She hosts meetings for all of our festival organizers. And she kind of goes against industry best practices, and she is considered a resource for the community. And so, yeah, she was already considered the connection point between the CVB and hotel, restaurants, attractions, arts groups. And that just amplified a little bit more during the pandemic and during the shutdown.
Yeah, we touched on this in my previous recording with Oxford, that the time to build the relationships with your stakeholders is not when the crisis hits. It's before the crisis hits.
Right.
So that you can lean on that relationship when the crisis hits.
Yeah, and we saw that. It was very evident. Elizabeth does a great job. She's a very personable person, and she's trusted. And I think that's the other thing is trust and follow through is a big, big deal. And you kind of touched on something. When all this happened, our restaurant owners, they were scrambling just to get people to show up.
Meaning employees.
Employees, right, right. And, you know, their employees were making more sitting at home than they were by showing up. And so, you know, we were just trying to help them. You know, we went through and said, okay, what can we do to make this easier on you? And so we went in and we said, okay, there used to be a city code that said you couldn't set up tents. Well, that's out the window. You can now set up tents in front of your thing, you know, for curbside takeaway to protect your employees from the elements. You can do tents out in front. You can hang a banner from it to say what your new hours are. So, you know, eliminating those things. Okay, now we're going to do to-go cups. We had a to-go cup ordinance where you could walk out of an establishment with a to-go cup with alcohol. So we said, all right, we're going to do that citywide. And so our city council approved that. And now you can do to-go drinks. So you can get margaritas to go with your Mexican food. Before, you couldn't do that. So we tried to do things to make it business friendly. We relaxed some of our ordinances as it relates to outside dining and how do you do that. And so we just try to be as business friendly to kind of help ease the burden on our restaurants in particular during this time. Because, I mean, it's tough. And then, you know, food costs went way up and the profit margins were coming down and you couldn't put as many people in your dining rooms. So we tried to be as sensitive as we could to their needs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I want to shift gears a little bit. We touched on earlier the asset that you have in having Elvis's birthplace here. A lot of destinations would love to have an asset like that, but a lot of destinations have that core asset, and what it causes is a lot of political issues because everybody feels like, well, they don't need any help. Why would you promote the Elvis's birthplace, you know, over our little business that needs help? So how do you, when you have a big rock attraction like that, how do you keep everybody happy?
Well, you don't. And I'm not going to pretend that we do. But what we do is have very honest conversations with people. And, you know, we refer to it as an attraction, but I also like to use the phrases attractors and attractions. So an attractor is going to get somebody here, and an attraction is something for them to do while they're here.
Oh, TM, I like that.
Yeah, so I've heard somebody else refer to them as linger-longers. You know, if you have this, then they can linger in your destination longer, but it's not going to attract them to your destination. So we're very honest with folks and say, look, people probably are not traveling to Tupelo because of your spot, but they are traveling because it's the birthplace of Elvis Presley, and there's no other place like that. And so we have that conversation with them. And you know, what we try to do is we try to include them in as many itineraries as we can. We try to include them in our PR effort. And so our PR effort is managed really well by our public relations agency. And they do a great job of keeping us out there. And anytime we get some hits from them, we like to share it with those partners. So anytime we can get them shared in the media, we do that. But it's just really just being honest with them. And sometimes that may cause a heartache and that may cause some dissension. But, you know, at the end of the day, I have to be accountable and I have to, you know, when it comes to reporting numbers and those kind of things, I can't make up stuff and sell it. So if I'm at least honest with them, then they appreciate that. They may not like it, but they'll at least appreciate the honesty.
Yeah. Well, good. I think that's a great answer. Authenticity seems like it's kind of the theme of this episode here, right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, for us in the Elvis story, that it is authenticity. It's the first 13 years of his life. I mean, you said yourself, you drove up to that little house and, you know, people can't truly appreciate Graceland until they see the two-room house that he was born in.
Right.
And having that authentic experience of walking in the house that he was born in with his twin brother who died at birth and hearing that story and being in that room and then walking into the actual church he attended as a child, you know, that's a very authentic experience. And, you know, again, I tell people all the time, if you want to know the Elvis story and if you want to read a biography, you don't start on chapter 14. You start from the beginning, and the beginning is here in Tupelo.
I like it. I like it. Okay, so you have obviously been doing this a long time. You've been in your role for 10 years. You've been at the destination for 16. You've obviously learned a lot over time. Tell me some of the key things that you've learned that might benefit people that may not have been in the industry as long as you've been?
The thing that I like the most, and I tell my staff all the time, was when you get comfortable, you probably need to check yourself. Like, once you get comfortable and things are okay, then that's the time when you need to make change. And we have changed, and we've gone about change here in the work that we do, and we're actually in that shift now of going, you know, we refer to ourselves as DMOs and the destination marketers. Well, we're changing the focus on the M. It's not just marketers, it's management. So
this sounds like Bill Geist. Have you been listening to Bill Geist?
Maybe a little bit. I'll give him some credit. No, Bill's a good guy, very smart guy. But we truly are. And so what we've done is we've allocated money in our budget for destination development. And we've got to invest in just talking and having very honest conversations. The other thing is the Elvis consumer is aging.
Yes.
The people that saw him firsthand, they're not going to be traveling in 15 years. They're not going to want to come and see, or the typical traveler we have now is not going to be traveling like they are now in 15, 20 years. And it's up to me to set us up for success for the next 15 or 20 years. So we have to find the next attractor to sustain Tupelo for the next 15 or 20 years. So those are things that we're doing, and we're looking at what are we going to be able to do to pull ourselves out of this. And it's going to be through festivals and events and outdoor experiences. And so we've got to create those. It may be repackaging some of our assets we have now, or it may be creating new assets. But we do have to get out there, and we have to challenge ourselves. And I think that's one of the things that our staff has done. You know, back probably about 6 years ago, we saw the demand for video and how important that is for inspiration. And so we created a position on staff that's all they do. Well, we've already divided that position up. You know, now we have digital content, and now we have content creator. So, you know, just constantly evolving, that's the big thing, is just being aware of what's changing in the market. And I think that we just get hung up too much on placing ads and not really focusing on the visitor experience once they arrive, and making sure, again, going back to delivering on the promise made in the ad. Are we doing enough of that for when the visitor arrives?
Yeah. Yeah, so continuing to manage the destination over time and not just market it. And I love
all of the touch points with the visitors.
All the touch points, that's right. He's got a copy of my book there for those of you that I guess everybody can't see. But yeah, if you want to learn how to do that, my book's a great way to do that.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting into it, because seriously, we talk about touch points with our visitors. And when we rolled out our brand that we...
Which did, I love, by the way.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And we hope that all of our... We talked about touch points and how did we roll that out. And so it was, you know, it had to arrive digitally, and then we had to have the website, and then we had to have our visitor center in our office, and, you know, signs when the visitor arrives to kind of go from inspiration to activation and then to arrival.
I love it. Awesome. Well, this has been great. One of the things that you talked about is that over time you've learned that you have to be willing to evolve. And I think that's one of the biggest plagues that's in our industry right now, is I think there's a lot of people that say, well, that's how we've always done it, right? And if you're saying that, if that's your answer to any question, well, that's how we've always done it, you got the answer wrong, right?
Yeah. And I will say that so much of the frustration comes in that people in my position and others, they get bogged down in the political climate and having to justify to either board members or council members or to mayors, and you lose sight of what you're truly trying to do with that money, and that is to grow and cultivate an economy. And in Tupelo, our tourism tax is viewed as just fertilizer. And so if we divert that fertilizer, then you're not putting any kind of fertilizer on the grass and getting it to grow. And so we have been very fortunate that our city leaders have left us alone to do the work of the industry. And so I'm very appreciative of that, and recognize that that's one of the foundations for what has given us success over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, support from the municipality is critical to the success of a DMO. But once again, it goes back to relationships. You've built those relationships, and that's the reason you're getting the support. Not to mention success also breeds support as well.
Yeah. Well, it is, and you know, you have to value that, and we do. We place an emphasis on that through Elizabeth and her work. And so you're exactly right of you know, cultivating relationships in good times.
Yeah.
So that you can lean on them in the hard times.
Well, this has been great. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you feel like would benefit our audience?
You know, I don't know. I think just kind of, you know, so many times people talk about looking ahead, and now this pandemic has forced us to kind of take the, you know, bright lights off and let's focus on
right
in front of us. And I think the ones that will be successful are the ones that are taking a short-term and long-term approach to this, because it's very obvious our industry is changing. The way that people travel is going to change. I think the way they travel, the trends in which they travel will change. And I hope we don't get too short-sighted of just trying to get people back.
Yeah.
And that we think about this long-term is what long-term effects will this have on the travel industry?
Yeah, everything should tie into what is best for the long-term vision, mm-hmm. whether that means short-term traffic or, like you guys are doing, holding off for a moment.
Yeah, yeah, and that is very much one of the things that we just said is, let's hold off. You know, it's just it would be wasteful. It would be wasteful dollars. And the other thing is just when you report, you know, and try to provide a return on investment report, I'm scared about what that's going to look like if all of these DMOs are having to spend the money by December 31st. And then our political leaders are going, well,
yep.
You didn't even make an effort. You didn't even make a dent. You didn't get more people to travel. Well, it's because people weren't ready to travel. So it's going to be some interesting times, and I think it will be maybe fun to look at in 2 or 3 years and look back and see how this truly affected a shift and change in travel patterns across the United States.
Great. Well, how could people learn more about Tupelo?
Tupelo.net is our website. On
Tupelo, for that's those right. of you worried about how to spell it.
That's right, Tupelo.net. You can search Elvis and birthplace of Elvis, and we'll show up. The other thing is on social media, MyTupelo, on all the channels. So you can find us there.
Great. Well, this has been awesome. Thanks a lot.
Adam, really thanks for stopping in. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Well, everybody, this has been another great episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. And if you would like to have your destination featured on the Destination Marketing Podcast on the road, I would love to come chat with you in person and get out of quarantine. And, you know, Neil and I are socially distanced here. He's 6 feet away from me, but we're having a great conversation. And if you want me to come to your destination, it's adam@relicagency.com. Reach out to me. We'll get you set up. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys, since we started the Destination Marketing Podcast a little over a year ago, I've had several destinations reach out and say, hey, could you help me start a podcast? And at first we were kind of like, well, no, that's not really what we do. But after enough requests, we said, you know what, let's explore this. And we've created a turnkey program for destinations where we will produce, we will host, we will edit, and we will publish your podcast for your destination on a weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly basis. And all you have to do is show up and answer some questions. We're really excited about this program. We've got a few destinations that have been doing really, really well with their podcast. And if you've ever thought about creating a podcast for your destination, but you don't have all the equipment or you don't have the expertise or any of that type of stuff, let us take that off your hands. Let Relic handle your podcast creation and production, and all you have to do is show up and answer questions about all the amazing things there are to do within your destination. So let me know if you're interested. Email me at adam@relicagency.com, and we'll get you set up on this podcast program.